Mark chapter 5, beginning at verse 21. And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, so that she may be made well and live." And he went with him. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and who had suffered much under many physicians, and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, "If I touch even his garments, I will be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John and the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. But he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha cum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. And they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this, and told them to give her something to eat. Waiting is tough, isn't it? It's hard to wait. It's hard to wait 15 minutes in the morning on those really cold winter mornings when you're waiting for the school bus. It's terrible, you know, to wait in the doctor's reception area waiting for your turn, for your appointment. Waiting is not something we do well. But Jairus, you know, in our text, has to wait. And he has to wait at a really crucial time. It's not just a little bit of being inconvenient. You know, Jairus is feeling the pressure of time, isn't he? In the providence of God, Jesus returns to the other side of the lake. And we didn't read the earlier portion, but Jesus had been on the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee. He had been in a territory that was almost predominantly Gentile country. Now, there were some scattered Jews living here and there, and it was where there was that great herd of pigs, you know, and the demon-possessed man, and he cast the legion of demons, you know, out of the man, and they go into the pigs, and the pigs drown in the sea. And the people, you know, predominantly probably Gentiles, you know, don't want Jesus around. And they ask him to please leave. And he does. And he goes back to the other side of the sea. We're not told exactly where. Is he back in Capernaum or back in some other town on that western side of the Sea of Galilee? The text doesn't let us know. But, you know, in God's providence, he's back just in time, it seems, as far as Jairus is concerned. You know, this man of some importance, one of the rulers of the synagogue, we're told, a man who certainly would probably have had the means and the influence, you know, to bring the doctors in. And so he's undoubtedly done that because his precious little girl, his 12-year-old daughter, is sick and she keeps getting worse. And now she seems to be getting close to death. And Jairus hears gladly that Jesus is back. And he goes running to Jesus. And he throws himself, we're told, at Jesus' feet. And he implores Jesus to come with him to his house, to lay his hands on his little girl, that she might live and not die. And Jesus says, yes. You can imagine, you know, Jairus' heart is soaring at this point. Hope has built. You know, he's been really at the point of despair. You know, his little girl seems to be ready to go away, to die. And surely now he's convinced Jesus will come in time. Surely Jesus will lay his hands on her. Surely she will be healed. And then he has to wait. There's a delay. Not some silly little thing, but a woman, sick, ill, not just for a few days, but for many years. For many years, she has been ill. She has been seeking out all kinds of doctors, and none of them have been able to help her. In fact, the text tells us she's getting worse. She's not getting any better. But she's heard about Jesus. She's heard how Jesus has healed so many. And with this discharge of blood that she has, she's unclean. She's not supposed to touch other people. Anybody who would that she touches would be ceremonially unclean. Anything she touches and then they touch, you know, would be unclean. And so she thinks she's just going to go quietly. She'll just sneak up behind Jesus and reach out and touch his clothes lightly. He'll never know I touched him, she seems to be saying to herself. And I can quietly slip away. And she does touch him, and she immediately feels the difference in her body. She knows she's well. But Jesus, too, feels the power leaving him. He knows that someone, you know, has touched him and been healed as the result of it. And so he asks that question, who touched me? The disciples are saying, Lord, are you serious? Now, there's this crowd of people all around you. All sorts of people are probably jostling into you. What do you mean, who touched you? But Jesus persisted, who touched me? And the woman, convicted, not, you know, of having necessarily done wrong, but feeling perhaps that, you know, Jesus is going to be really upset, you know, with what she's done, you know, comes and throws herself at Jesus' feet. But rather than a rebuke, rather than Jesus taking her to task for what she's done, you know, he assures her that indeed, you know, she's been healed. You know, otherwise, there could have been the fear that would have lingered in there. Is it going to be taking away? Did I do something wrong by sneaking up on Jesus? And he'll take it back somehow. But Jesus, in calling her out from the crowd, calls her out to assure her of God's love and care for her, and of how her trust in him has brought her healing. But all this time, the minutes have just ticked by. Jairus, you can imagine, is getting edgier by the moment. You know, it's hard for him to have sympathy for this woman when his little girl is dying. And in fact, before they really get on their way again, some people from his house come with the sad news. Your little girl has died. Why trouble the teacher further, they ask. Let's just slip on home and mourn for your daughter. But Jesus overhears them, doesn't he? And this is not to be a time for fear and despair. Jesus calls Jairus to faith. Jairus had come in faith. You know, we heard that in the text. You know, we see in verse 23, and he implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." You know, he's confident in Jesus. If you come, if you lay your hands on her, she's not going to die. She'll live. You can heal her. I know that. You know, that seems to be the tone of what Jairus is saying, this confidence in Jesus. Yeah, he's a ruler in the synagogue. You know, he's interested in spiritual things. You know, maybe he's already sought Jesus out quietly, a part of the crowd on some other occasion when Jesus was there in that area. And he's heard Jesus teaching with his own ears, and he's seen with his own eyes the people that Jesus healed and out of whom he cast unclean spirits. Or maybe simply as a ruler in the synagogue, he's talked to some of the people of the synagogue who've been in the crowd, or people that actually were healed by Jesus. Jairus seems to know. You know, he knows that Jesus can heal. He knows that it's real. You know, he's come to a conviction. He's come to an assent of that truth that Jesus can heal. He's not come to the conclusion that Jesus is a fake, like the Pharisees did in the text we looked at last week. You know, he hasn't come to the conclusion, like some of Jesus' own family and a portion of Scripture we haven't yet looked at, that Jesus is somehow, he's gone off the deep end. This isn't normal, what Jesus is doing. He's missing meals. He's, you know, totally always surrounded by these crowds. He's given up any semblance of normal life. You know, he must be mentally unstable. And certainly Jairus hasn't come to the conclusion that this Jesus is demon-possessed. There were those who charged Jesus with that. But Jairus knows, he knows that Jesus can heal. He knows that he's exercising the power of God. And he's come to believe that in his heart. He's assented to those truths. And now he's going to exercise that trust in Jesus. That's what he's doing by coming to Jesus in the first place. You know, his knowledge and his assent to that knowledge has been followed by trust. He comes to Jesus in faith that Jesus can heal his daughter. But it seems as if he's on the verge of despair. He's on the verge of giving in to fear. For Jesus says to him immediately when that report comes to him, "Do not fear, only believe." See, don't let your heart give in to that despair that's crowding out faith. Yes, you've heard horrible news. Your daughter is dead. Destruction has overtaken her. But don't be afraid. Only believe. Continue to believe. See, that's what Jesus is calling Jairus to do. Continue to believe. Continue to believe that I am able to give her back to you. Just as you believe that I was able to give her back to you when she's on the brink of death, you know, believe that I'm able to give her back to you now that she's crossed over into death itself. Jesus doesn't call for greater faith on the part of Jairus. There are times when he calls for greater faith, when he takes people to task for being of little faith. But really, it's not a matter of having more faith on Jairus' part. It's not as if somehow greater faith on his part is going to restore his daughter to him from death. Faith doesn't heal. Faith doesn't restore. It's Jesus who does. Faith is laying hold of Jesus. And Jairus has already done that. And so Jesus is calling him to continue. Don't abandon that faith. Don't abandon it to fear and despair. Continue to believe. See, and Mark continues in this text to show us the authority of Jesus. We've skipped over some chapters. We may go back to some of those. But Mark has already shown us how Jesus is the Lord of life. He has shown us the authority that Jesus has at the beginning of his ministry, as Mark records it in that synagogue there in Capernaum. You know, the very first thing that we see Jesus doing miraculously is that he casts out that evil spirit from the man who's been possessed by it. And then we see him healing sick bodies, you know, Peter's mother-in-law and a whole crowd of other people from Capernaum who've come. He casts out demons and he heals all the sick who come. And he continues to do that. We see that he's Lord. He's Lord over the demons. He's Lord over the human body. In chapter 4, a passage we haven't yet looked at, we see that he's Lord over creation. You know, the sea is raging. The wind is blowing ferociously. These experienced seamen are at the point of believing that they're doomed. They've come to the conclusion, "We're perishing," they say to Jesus. And Jesus simply speaks, and the wind ceases, and the waves quiet down. Jesus is Lord in this world. And Jesus is about to show us now that his lordship extends even to that great enemy, death. At Jairus' home, Jesus dismisses the crowd that's making a commotion. You know, paid mourners. You know, every culture has its rituals, you know, for death and burial, and part of the rituals there was you paid people, you know, to show how sorry you were at this death. And so there were professional mourners, you know, people who got paid, you know, to weep and cry out and make a big commotion. And there they are, they've already come. You know, the little girl is barely dead, and there they are. You know, they're doing their job. And Jesus sends them away, dismissing them by saying, "She's not dead, but she's asleep." And they laugh at him. They're convinced that she is. And truly, she has crossed over from life to death. But Jesus is telling them that this death isn't final. It's not permanent. He's about to raise her to life. And so he takes with him mom and dad. And he takes with him Peter, James, and John. He's left the whole rest of the crowd back wherever he met with that woman who had the issue of blood. He forbade the others from following him at that point. So he takes these five into the little girl's room along with him. And very simply, he simply says to her, "Little girl, arise." And she does. She gets up and she walks. And they give her something to eat. You know, that was a way to show that she wasn't just a spirit. You know, spirits didn't eat. But she's a real, living little girl again. Just like that. A simple word. And Jesus breaks that hold of death upon her. He has called Jairus to continue to believe. And Jairus did. He allowed Jesus to come to his home. He demonstrated his faith in that way. He didn't try to put Jesus off. "Oh, you know, why bother, Jesus? You just stay here. You know, it's too late." No, he allows Jesus to continue on to his home. Jairus heeded Jesus' words. He believes. He continues to believe that Jesus is Lord. He's Lord even of death. See, what kind of a deliverance do you need? You know, maybe you need that deliverance out of sin and death itself. You need salvation. That's why Jesus came predominantly to seek and to save the lost, to bring you out of that place of walking on the path of death and destruction to having life in him, eternal life, new life. See, Jesus is able to deliver you from death. He's delivered multitudes, you know, from sin and death, and he will deliver you if you turn to him in faith. But maybe as his people, you know, you're facing some situations that almost are hopeless. You know, they've gone on and on. You've waited and waited. You know, remember how Jairus waited? You know, he waited while Jesus was dealing with the woman. It seemed as if everything was lost. And perhaps that's how it may seem to you. You've prayed again and again and again for weeks and months and years, you know, to be delivered from some particular temptation that just always trips you up. Or to be delivered, you know, from some illness that has beset you. Or for that grace you need, you know, to face the challenges that are there on your job. Or to face, you know, all the problems that are there in your home. Whatever it is, you know, you've prayed and prayed, and it seems as if you're still waiting. And you are, as long as you're still in those circumstances. And I believe that Jesus, you know, says to you as well, you know, continue to believe. You know, don't fear, don't despair. All is not lost. Jesus can deliver you from the worsening circumstances just as easily as he could have at the beginning of the problems. We don't know why he may have chosen to delay, perhaps to strengthen your faith, perhaps that your deliverance might cause others to be amazed as his disciples and the parents were amazed at this little girl coming to life again. We don't know the answer to those kind of things, but what we do know is that there isn't anything greater than Jesus' ability to deal with. You know, his power, you know, his compassion, you know, his caring for you, his people, is as constant and firm today as it has always been throughout the ages for his people. And so as you continue to wait, you know, continue to believe. And ultimately, he will deliver you. Maybe in this life, but if not in this life, we know that his ultimate deliverance is in the life to come, when we have a new body, a resurrection body, when we're away from this world of tears, and every tear has been dried, and when we're away from the troubles of sin that plague us, we're there in his righteous kingdom. And we see his face shining upon us because of his love for us, which has been eternal. Let's pray.